Hello and welcome to The Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. My name, Matt Christie. Opposite me is John Dennan, and I should feel quite lucky that you're in today, John. You've, prior to today, the last time I saw you was on your birthday, which I believe was Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Now, there was myself, there was you, and there was Nick Bond.
And you poisoned me.
And we had, I believe Nick and I had three beers, you had two beers, and then you went on your merry way to meet your friends. The next thing I know, you're texting saying, you're texting the next morning saying, you are genuinely ill.
I have now, been genuinely ill
now
for
some
2 days.
So some might say, the cynical among us might say that you had a 2 day hangover.
If that's a hangover, it's the hangover from hell. Stuff has been going on, Matt. It's been not cool. I've been poisoned by a hamburger. I'm accusing BrewDog of poisoning me with a hamburger. It's been rough. I've had some pretty intense meat sweats. Actually, this morning I had this dream. It was possibly a vision, and in my dream, it was so real. I was walking down the street. And this mangy dog was walking the other way, and this dog jumped up and pushed me, and I was with some friends in my dream, and they didn't see the dog jump up and push me, and I didn't touch the dog, but my friends were like, oh, you elbowed that dog. And they were like, you know, they were so disgusted with me that they thought I'd elbowed this dog when I didn't.
It sounds like the kind of thing you'd do though, to be honest.
I would never elbow a dog.
Maybe you would during a 2 day hangover.
Anyway, that was slightly off topic.
Okay, right. So, the boxing season is upon us. We spoke about it last week, and there does seem to be a lot to look forward to. Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Moraes got things started last week with a tremendous fight. I didn't think it was a classic in the Hagler-Hearns, Morales, Barrera sense of the word.
Was it a fight of the year contender?
Yeah, it was one of the better ones, I thought. It was one of the better ones I've seen, but it wasn't something that I think that I would stand up to repeat viewings. And I think probably for that, the main reason for that is that there was no question about who was going to win. Santa Cruz looked in control pretty much all the way through. Mahrez certainly played his part in it. What does this mean now for Leo Santa Cruz? He's up at featherweight. So it seems that he has now definitely left super bantamweight behind. He went through a period, we discussed it last week, where he was kind of treading water almost and just kind of beating people that we hadn't heard of. He's now made a bit of a statement with a win against Mahrez. What's next for him, particularly in the featherweight division, do you think?
Well, this is putting back up there, and it just shows what a difference fighting a decent opponent does for you. Because if you fight these sort of nobodies and don't look particularly good, your stock drops and drops and drops. But now, you know, he's a significant player in the featherweight division. You know, the champions want to fight him. Gary Russell Jr. and Lee Selby were both there watching the fight with an eye on the winner. So, you know, a potential fight with either of them, those are good fights to make.
He still does look, he's not an invincible type of gladiator, is he, Leo Santa Cruz? You sense that the right kind of fighter could beat him. What chance would you give those names that you just mentioned against Leo Santa Cruz?
I definitely favour Selby. I think Selby's sort of too skillful, big as well at featherweight. You know, strong. I think it'd be too good for him. I'm not quite sure what to make of Gary Russell Jr. And I just wonder if Santa Cruz could outwork him and he might wilt in the end. He's sort of up there because of the featherweight. You've got Lomachenko, best featherweight around. Selby, then, you know, I have Selby above Gary Russell Jr. Who else is there at featherweight?
Let's consult rankings. Nicholas Walters, but his stay at featherweight could.
He seems to have outgrown it.
Yeah.
So.
Who else have we got? Yeah, Selby.
And Cole Frampton's, he's talked about potentially moving up.
I can't see it. Can you? He looks like he'd be so small for featherweight.
Yeah.
Frampton. I'd be surprised if what they were saying at the end of that last fight, for Frampton's last fight, is actually what was going to happen.
Yeah, because he's in his late 20s.
Yeah.
So I think he's found his weight class, yeah, probably.
Yeah, you'd think so.
So I think he'd be losing some of his advantages to step up.
Okay, on the flip side of Santa Cruz and Abner Morris, two guys at their peak going at it and providing wonderful entertainment, was Shane Mosley, rapidly approaching 44 years old, and Ricardo Mayorga engaging in a rather pointless rematch. The contest may be not quite as bad as we feared, but what does it prove? And the fact that Mosley won and he won convincingly, is all it's going to do is persuade him to carry on even longer. This fight, I believe, was made at middleweight in the end.
I think Mayorga was offered quite a hefty bonus if he made the weight.
Yeah, I think it was at a catch weight of 158 pounds and Mayorga was nowhere near it.
Yeah.
I think Mosley was around the middleweight limit. Now, you can't imagine Mosley competing at middleweight, can you?
No. I mean, if you look at, just how big and strong the top middleweights are. But yeah, I'm not sure what is Mosley going to do from here. Where does he go?
Well,
what's it all about?
It's not
why.
Why? I think there's an element of an ego there, and of course there's always the money thing. You know, boxers get used to money; they spend it quickly.
But if he promoted this himself.
He promoted it himself, and I think he put in $1 million. I've read that he put in $1 million of his own money, and surely he didn't get that back.
Yeah, is he making a profit out of this?
But I mean, realistically, considering what we've seen before, it's probably starting. I mean, for me, the decline was obvious when these two first fought, which I believe was 2007. In Shane Mosley, he had a harder time than many anticipated with Ricardo Mayorga. Then came the win over Antonio Margarito, but following that was lost to Floyd Mayweather. He lost pretty much every round, bar that now famous second where he tagged Mayweather. There was the one-sided loss to Manny Pacquiao when he was lucky to last the distance. One-sided loss to Saul Alvarez. Somewhere in there, he struggled to a draw with Sergio Mora. His final fight prior to this Mayorga rematch was a loss to Anthony Mundine inside schedule. I mean, how likely is it that the break away from the ring, which was close to 2 years, has healed the injuries, has healed the problems, and that we're looking at a rejuvenated fighter?
At
the age of 44.
Exactly, because that's a sort of a sequence of heavy losses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially Canelo against Pacquiao. And that win over Margarito was a long time ago, and that was just a sort of a, dead cat bounce. as in like a...
Yeah, yeah.
Like a high amidst a decline. So, yeah, I just don't... Yeah, I don't... I just don't... I don't think carrying on is a good idea. Even if he's fighting fellow old timers, he's still got all the, you'd still have to do all the sparring and that kind of stuff. And I think at this stage, he's got to start looking for, alternative career paths outside of being in the ring himself.
Thing is, though, for all the wrong reasons, this did generate a lot of headlines in the boxing world last week. The whole build up to Mosley Mayorga. Was it going to happen, first of all? What did they have left? Was the whole on-stage altercation with Mosley's missus staged, etc., etc., etc.? I think you can see why Mosley could walk into a big-ish fight on the back of this, I hate to say.
Yeah, I suppose. Gave people plenty of stuff to tweet about, Mosley included. But then, you know, surely a real star couldn't fight Shane Mosley now.
Well, no, you wouldn't. No, no, you wouldn't.
Tarnishing their stock.
No, no, but perhaps, I don't know, you could see an up-and-comer at welterweight or light middleweight.
Even Chris Algieri maybe, would be maybe, on this fight.
Maybe, I don't know, that's a pick-em fight, isn't it, Mosley Algieri?
How dare you. How very dare you. I'm just gutted that Algieri Kell Brook isn't happening.
Okay, I think we need to leave. I think we need to leave that one alone now.
No, we were going to segue smoothly onto Kell Brook, Diego Chavez. It was
okay. So
week.
Diego Chavez, then, if you want to talk about that next, Kell Brook, Kell Brook, Diego Chavez, Chavez. It wasn't a shock that Diego Chavez was the opponent and not Tim Bradley.
No, well, we've kind of gone round the houses to get back to Diego Chavez.
Yeah.
He was sort of one of the names in the frame quite a while ago.
Is he a good opponent for Kell Brook at this stage?
I would say yes. There are better opponents out there. Tim Bradley, who you mentioned, Keith Thurman, they're the obvious people. Brandon Rios, they were clearly trying to make. Though it seems like those sort of top tier guys are going to struggle to get over to the UK. So either Kell's got to go to America to fight them, which he's won in America before, or if you sort of look to fight these slightly lesser guys, then stay in the UK to do it. So out of the lesser guys, Diego Chavez, he got a lucky draw with Tim Bradley.
Yeah.
But was he unfortunate? Was he winning until he got disqualified against Brandon Rios?
Yeah.
So not the worst opponent they could have got.
He's a step up from Brook's first two challenges.
Yeah.
But still a marked step down, I would say, from the guy that he took the title from in Sean Porter over a year ago.
Yeah, and Porter's gone on to beat Broner.
Yeah.
You know, and how Kell Brook could have done with, like, you know, a name like that or a fight like that.
However, Chavez will be a decent name on his record. Do you think, I'm just looking at the welterweight rankings, and the vast majority of guys there that Brook will be aiming at are signed with a certain Al Haymon. Do you think the fact that Brook is not is hurting his chances of breaking America?
Yes, to an extent, but so far, out of Al Haymon's Premier Boxing Champions, we haven't seen sort of a new superstar created.
True.
We're still no closer to knowing who the next Floyd Mayweather's going to be. Though, I mean, Porter, Adrian Broner was a good fight. Outside of that, we haven't seen the Al Haymon welterweights fighting their sort of equals. You have had Thurman, Guerrero, Danny Garcia, poorly managed Nagy. You haven't quite had the big fights at welterweight being made. So, you know, I'm not sure if Al Haymon would turn Kell Brook into an instant star. And also, you know, they're based in the US. You'd lose out building up your home fan base. And his first defence in Sheffield, there was a great atmosphere there. So I think if you're going to go with Premier Boxing Champions, you're going to end up fighting in the States. So you might lose something with that. And it's on free-to-view TV over there, which Al Haymon's paying good money to all his fighters. But if Kell Brook wants to be a pay-per-view fighter, then, well, he'd probably have to be over here to be on Sky. Not necessarily to be on a Sky pay-per-view. I guess they'd want him to try and build him in big events with home support over here.
I certainly don't think it's essential for Brook to go with Haymon by any stretch of the imagination. I think you made some good points there. And I think, you know, fans often can be a little bit too harsh, a little bit too cruel about opponent choices. It's not always that simple. And I think, kind of echoing almost what you've just said, if Diego Chavez, for example, was announced as Keith Thurman's next opponent on on National Boxing Champions, there wouldn't be a huge outcry about it. I'm sure Chavez would be seen as a decent, sturdy enough kind of challenger. So I think Chavez is fine for Kell Brook as part of the bigger picture. But I do think this will probably be, well, hopefully, the last kind of fight like this before he's unleashed on some of the top guns in the division.
But he might have a mandatory looming as well.
Who's that against?
I don't think. I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure if Final Eliminator's been boxed. Because at one stage, Devin Alexander was in the frame to box in a Final Eliminator for Brooks' title, and I guess he pulled out of that or something. So he is actually finding it hard to get the big names. But I can sort of see why, because obviously Mayweather, you know, he's made no secret that he wants to fight Mayweather, obviously. Well, for obvious reasons, but also, you know, Mayweather's busy. Pacquiao's out till next year. You know, I believe they've been talking about the Tim Bradley fight, but Bradley got paid a lot of money to fight Diego Chavez in Las Vegas, so it'd be hard to get him over here. And Bradley just,
I can't imagine anyone in America though is going to be in a hurry to pay Bradley that kind of money again, though. I don't think that was a massive commercial success, that bill. But yeah, like you say, you know, you're exactly right.
And the rumours are that Bradley's—it's not been confirmed—but the rumours are that Bradley's going to fight Brandon Rios,
which
makes sense in the States.
Yeah.
But again, that takes sort of two decent opponents away from Kell Brook. Not much point fighting Sean Porter again. Marcus Maidana would be good. That would be a good fight for him. But
as Keith Thurman though said recently in our magazine, Marcus Maidana's looking like he's closer to a heavyweight these days than welterweight. I think he really is enjoying life after probably earning a fortune in those two fights with Floyd Mayweather. And do you know what?
Who can blame him? Yeah, I'll be a heavyweight. I am a heavyweight.
So let's say that. Okay, so we now know that Brook and Khan are not going to fight this year, or we can be as certain as we can be that they're not going to fight this year. But Amir Khan surely will fight this year, with Brook well and truly off the table. Who do you think would be a good opponent for Amir Khan? Or maybe not a good opponent, because you could say Mayweather, for example. That's a realistic option for Amir Khan.
Well, isn't a rematch with Danny Garcia?
That is a good.
Couldn't that be made?
I like
They're
it.
They're both Al Haymon fighters.
I like it.
You know, Khan would have the chance to avenge his defeat. Khan's look better at welterweight. Gossier's
keep on talking, keep on talking.
Gossier's just come up to welterweight. You know, that's a really good fight. I'm not so sure it'll happen, though.
No.
Based on what we were saying, that these sort of top American welterweights aren't fighting each other yet.
Yeah.
If Keith Thurman's only fought, what, Collazo and Guerrero before that, they haven't been desperate to fight the best available. So we'll see, but I think Khan will fight before this year is done. Yeah, and if, say, Kell Brook gets in another fight at the end of the year, he may not fight, he hasn't been fighting the best guys he can, or hit the best guys out there, but at least he's been active.
True.
And potentially winning in style. But Kell Brook, Amir Khan has to happen in 2016. Be mental if it didn't.
One fight that we thought was going to be happening in 2016, it's just starting to look.
In
2015. It's starting to look like it may not happen at all. Is Andy Lee, Billy Joe Saunders, really, really unfortunate for all involved. Billy Joe Saunders suffered a cut in training, so the Andy Lee for the fight for the second time is postponed. It was a fight I was really looking forward to. It's a big miss off the British boxing calendar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a real shame. It would have been big. It would have been big in the UK. It would have been a good fight. Hard to pick a winner. Even though Billy Joe Saunders made me pick a winner when I was speaking to him for the website. But it's a close one. It's been two postponements now. Bad cut for Billy Joe Saunders. So are they going to wait to try and make it again, or is Andy Lee going to want to look at other options? Because there are other pretty decent fights for Andy Lee that he could have.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it, for Andy Lee, really.
Andy Lee, Chris Eubank Jr.?
Well, do you know what? When it was all going, it was Tuesday, wasn't it? It was press day when we were trying to put the magazine to bed, and people were kind of, we knew that the fight was off, but we didn't know whether it was cancelled or postponed. There's obviously a difference between the two. And then, it suddenly did cross our minds in the office if Andy Lee, Chris Eubank Jr. might get a phone call to step in at the last minute. That would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have been.
Chris Eubank Jr. comes from nowhere to knock out Andy Lee.
I'm not saying that would happen. But it's all gone quiet on the Chris Eubank Jr. front. Which is sort of a shame. He needs to be fighting regularly, I'd say. Because what he fought in, he fought in February against one of the Chudinov brothers.
Yeah. And no, he hasn't fought since then. I know he was supposed to be fighting Les Sherrington on one of the Frank Warren bills earlier on. I think it was May or April, April or May. And I spoke to, in Brighton, I spoke to Chris Eubank Jr. Just as he was finding out that fight was no longer happening. And at that point, when I was talking to him, all he was really focused on was a rematch with Billy Joe Saunders. I'm not quite sure what's going on. I'm not quite sure what's going on in that camp, apart from I keep hearing they're waiting for the right opponent. But he hasn't really worked himself into that position as yet.
No, it
where
would be
he can,
quite
where he can pick and choose.
Yeah. And yeah, but I mean, if you were to get a sudden shot at Andy Lee, that would be quite fortuitous.
Yeah.
But you know, he's just lucky.
He is.
But this is just speculation. There's nothing concrete.
No.
We haven't heard anything actually linking them.
No. Okay, so another guy that was not so long ago being mentioned alongside Andy Lee was Matthew Macklin, who was in action at the weekend. He won his second consecutive fight since that disastrous loss to Highland. Was it?
Yeah, is it Jorge Sebastian?
Highland, yeah. Now we speak to Matthew Macklin. It's all interesting stuff in this week's magazine, and he explains that he's moving down to light middleweight. For his blowout win at the weekend, he scaled still just over the middleweight limit, but the intention is there to move all the way down to 154 pounds. And a little snippet from the interview is that he justifies his seriousness for this move by saying that he was offered the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight at super middleweight, but turned it down and will now fight Jason Wellborn at light middleweight. Now, it's because he believes that he's got a chance of glory more so at light middleweight. He doesn't believe he's big enough to compete at super middleweight, which is fair enough.
Plus Chavez Jr., how heavy would he have come in?
Exactly, it probably wouldn't have ended well for Macklin, that fight. But, I mean, Macklin, at the age of 33, I really, really enjoyed following Matthew's career. I think he's been wonderful to watch. He's been unlucky in at least one of his three world title shots. But when you say he's 33, you know, for a boxer, you sense he's an old 33, just because the amount of wars that he's been through. And it's very rare for a fighter who's been campaigning at a certain weight class for a long time, then late in their careers, to drop down. It doesn't seem to be quite as hazardous to move up, but to drop down, it rarely ends well.
Yeah, exactly. I think as you get older, you should be looking at moving up. And you know, you see with boxers as well, sometimes when they move up, they do get, you know, a little bit more durable. they do prove a little bit more solid, and I think moving down at a late stage, it's kind of risky, you know, draining yourself as well. You know, like Khan's actually looked better going up to welterweight, looked a little bit more solid.
Yeah.
I know he's probably younger than Matthew. I know he's younger than Matthew, but yeah, I think it's potentially worrying going down to light middleweight, because what was the last time he boxed at light middleweight?
Jamie Moore,
which didn't end well.
No, great fight, but the ending was, I remember being, yeah, it was quite sickening in the end.
And you know, we've spoken to him a long time ago now, but he was talking about, you know, how the weight really got to him ahead of the Jamie Moore fight. I think he was saying he had cramps or something like that. You know, maybe he just didn't do the weight right. Maybe they're, you know, more now, you know, now this many years on, maybe they're nutritionists that could help, but still seems unideal, especially when they're, you know, when they're decent, you know, when they're good fights to be had at middleweight or even super middleweight. You know, you might be a bit more solid at super middle. Very much, you know, like Martin Murray's gone up from middleweight to super middle.
He's looked quite solid, hasn't he? I know the opposition hasn't been all that, but Murray looks like a good fit for Martin Murray at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and I know he was always a big middleweight, but yeah. Still, if Macklin was thinking of fighting Murray when they were both middleweights, why couldn't they fight now at super middleweight? Andy Lee, Matthew Macklin at middleweight would be a good fight. Macklin, Chris Eubank Jr., you'd watch that fight.
Yeah, you would. What do you, I mean, Jason Wellborn, it's a step up for Wellborn. I don't mean any offence to him at all. It's a step down, you sense, really, for what Macklin's been used to in terms of his big fights. But it suddenly becomes quite interesting for me, this Macklin-Wellborn fight, in that you give Wellborn a chance, don't you?
If the weight is the problem, I think, you know, because Macklin's so experienced, and he's fought Sturm, Sergio Martinez, or, you know, of course, Golovkin. So he's been in there with everyone. But if he's looking vulnerable, and then trying to lose weight is another disadvantage, you know, I wouldn't pick Wellborn to win. I think Macklin would be, I'd have him a clear favourite to win the fight.
No, you would think so, but we've seen this kind of thing. We have seen this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
So to me, it becomes very, very interesting for perhaps slightly obscure reasons. But as I say, in this week's issue, I mean, all those concerns we've just raised there, Matthew addresses them all. So they're all in this week's boxing news. Also, there is an interview with Dave Caldwell. Our writer George Gigney made the trip up to Rotherham last week. Was it last week or the week before? I think it was 2 weeks ago, actually. It was before.
So much has happened since.
It was just the day. It was the day before that Caldwell was going to join Jamie McDonnell on his trip to Texas. Some great stuff in there about Dave Caldwell, who really does eat, sleep and breathe the sport. And it does tell the tale of an interesting journey from kind of struggling domestic level flyweight right through to top level trainer. But he's out in Texas at the moment with Jamie McDonnell. Jamie McDonnell also, in a slightly different way, but he's come on quite a journey himself.
Oh yeah.
Still perhaps not where he deserves to be in terms of how well known he is to the sporting public at large. However, that's probably largely down to his weight class. Quite amusing. I've seen there's lots of interviews I've seen flying around with him. I've seen them on the television. I've seen them on websites and what have you. And McDonald is an entertaining character, particularly when he's alongside his brother Gavin.
I think he's come more into his own since the Tomoki Kameda fight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after winning that in the States as well, I think that does kind of prove that he belongs amongst the best, even though he's won a world title. He's done it, you know, a little bit under the radar, isn't it? He won it against a good Mexican in Doncaster, but again, that, you
know, was this the IBF title?
That was the IBF bantamweight title. Who was it? You know, the
Julio
Kea. Yeah, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Sichuan.
Exactly. But yeah, again, so that fight, you know, didn't really get him the attention a world champion deserves. And then he's been sort of, you know, he's been under the radar a little bit since then. Obviously, he got a title, a WBA title on the, did he win it on the Frotch Groves undercard?
It was on the Frotch Groves 2 undercard, yeah.
But obviously, it was the main event on that particular occasion that captured everyone's attention.
He was quite a long way down the bill as well, I seem to remember. It was, he was on before De Gale as well. De Gale beat someone up on that. On that bill, and I think he was even before that.
I had my seat sold from underneath me, so I was running around desperately trying to find an internet connection to live blog the main event from at the time. I found myself sat next to Derek Chisora with no internet, no plug.
Yeah, I bet that was interesting.
My seat was sold from under me.
Okay, so what do we think is going to happen? We mentioned it last week. It's a risky fight for Jamie because we've just said how far he's come. A loss, particularly a convincing one, would really be hard for him to come back from at the current weight class he's in. But a win is fantastic. This time that WBA title is at stake. It wasn't last time. And there is a bit of a buzz about him. Do you believe he's going to do it again?
Yeah, I do. And he might even, you know, it's always good winning the first fight. And I think he can improve on his performance because obviously what Kameda put him down, he started slow. You know, he's never been one to sort of, you know, study that much, you know, watch tape that much or study it that much. So I think he'll know better what's in store for him. So I think he'll probably be a bit better equipped to deal with. I'm not saying it's not still a dangerous fight, but I think he can repeat the victory. But it's risky. You know, it is going over to Texas where we haven't always seen the best judging. So he is the away fighter once again. So it's going to be hard to repeat it, but I think he can do it.
Into also on Sky this weekend is Josh Warrington's featherweight tussle with Joel Brunker. We were talking about it last week, weren't we?
Yeah, we touched on it last week. Last week I was saying I thought, you know, how Selby beat Brunker well. But then, as I was saying earlier today, I think Selby's up there with the top featherweights in the world. Josh Warrington's a lot more to prove and, you know, probably has the style to get into a tear-up with Brunker, so I think this could be tough.
You've experienced the Josh Warrington fight up in Leeds, haven't you?
Yeah, on a Wednesday night. And they were mental.
He's a very popular guy up there, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he's got that fan base that if he does start to make strides through the world rankings, he could become quite a popular force in boxing. Do you think he's got the ability to match?
Yeah, to an extent. Like, he's not as sort of, you know, he excels in certain departments, like, you know, he's, you know, work rate, combination punches that he does very well. So he does have ability, but there's a long way to go to get himself to like world class level. Like if you fought Lee Selby right now, or if they fought next year, you'd have Selby a clear favourite. But you know, he's certainly good enough to be difficult for anyone. I'd expect him to beat Brunker, and having that fervent support behind you really helps. You know, home advantage with that kind of support adds, you know, a certain something to your performances. And the fact that he you know, he has such a sort of dynamic, high energy style. It's going to make him difficult to beat for anyone. But he hasn't proven he's at world level yet.
Okay. So, what else do we need to talk about?
More of my meat sweat visions.
No, that was a bit disturbing, I think. Yes, this is the 20-year anniversary of Frank Bruno defeating Oliver McCall for the WBC heavyweight title. We've got a feature about it in this week's issue. I think anybody that kind of remembers what it was like to kind of support Frank Bruno through his four world heavyweight title shots, we'll hopefully get some enjoyment somewhere in that article. We speak to Oliver McCall's trainer, Ian Dark, reflects on what it was like commentating on the night. A couple of other people in there as well from behind the scenes. So that's all good stuff. John, you, even though you are 33 now, is that right?
I am 33.
You're probably a little young to remember Bruno's glory days. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. As in, I sort of remember the national love of Frank Bruno, but, you know, as for what happened in his fights and that kind of stuff, I didn't experience directly. It's something I more read about after the time. Well, you know, because I remember he was in a lot of pantomimes when I was young, as I remember.
I used to hate pantomimes even. I think I've hated pantomimes all my life, in fact. I don't ever remember enjoying a pantomime, even if my beloved Frank Bruno was in it.
I just remember seeing him in a lot of pantomime posters.
Yeah, he was. He was. Do they still exist, pantomimes? I've just blocked them completely from my life.
I don't know. They're probably a hipster thing now. They're probably coming back.
Okay, so I think that'll just about do it for this week. Next week is obviously the build-up to Floyd Mayweather, Andre Berto, which I feel like we've already kind of covered at length.
But I now feel like we have to mention it every podcast.
In previous weeks.
How are you feeling about it today?
Well, the trip's all booked, so I'm heading out there.
Going large, big time.
Whether or not, we never get word of accreditation until, you know, a week or so before, and I think we're due to hear on, what's the date today, the 4th?
Today is the 4th.
So I think it's any time now, hopefully, we'll say that our accreditation has been approved. But, it's Floyd Mayweather, isn't it? He's the, I've just actually finished writing the preview for the fight with Andre Berto. And without question, he's the best fighter of his generation. And for that reason alone, watching someone that gifted do what they were born to do is an experience in itself. I'm more than on board with the criticism regarding Andre Berto as a challenger. But as I've said before, you know, worse things happen in this world. And, you know, I think just the absolute outrage over it is perhaps a bit OTT, but you understand it as well. You understand it. You understand why Mayweather should be testing himself. But there's two sides to the argument, isn't there? You say, well, has he not already tested himself enough? He started out super featherweight 18 years ago. Well, more than that now, but when he won his first belt at super featherweight in 1998, he's won world titles all the way up to light middleweight. So you could say that he has tested himself. And I'm not his biggest fan in the world, by the way. But it's just too easy just to kind of say, well, yeah, do the next thing. And, you know, I was reading something earlier where people are criticising for not going up and fighting at middleweight. Is, you know, it would be lovely if he did go and fight Golovkin, but should we seriously undermine all of his other achievements just because he's kind of said enough is enough in regards to his body?
Yeah, and he's never fought at middleweight before, has he?
No.
So, and there are weight classes for a reason, I don't think. You know, as nice as the Golovkin fight would be, I don't think you can really insist upon it. You know, Miguel Cotto fight, even though normally Cotto is a middleweight, the fact that they fought before and Cotto's only been fighting around 155 pounds or so he's essentially a light middleweight. That's, you know, that's probably, you know, that's not an unreasonable fight to ask for, but then Mayweather's already beaten him.
I was joking with you earlier about the fact that this time, because this time next week, I'll probably give Andre Berto half a chance, because you do, particularly when it's someone like Mayweather, in that they've never lost, and you're out there, and you feel that what it would be incredible to witness something that's never been done before. But I mean, to me, you have to go back a long way to find someone who on paper is given less of a chance against Mayweather, and let's face it, not many are given a chance with Mayweather, but you have to go back a long way to find someone who's given less of a chance than Andre Berto. You also are a bit of an optimist with underdogs.
I am. I've been known to.
Do you give Berto any single chance whatsoever? Have you seen anything from Floyd Mayweather over the last couple of years and Andre Berto over the last... Bertie? Andre.
Oh, what a great nickname.
Little Andre Little Bertie Berto. Have you seen anything from Little Bertie or Mayweather over the last few years to suggest that we could be about to witness what would be an upset to rival James Douglas versus Mike Tyson in 1990?
No, I can't see it happening, because Mayweather, I think, is still pretty close to the top of his game, especially, you know, even if he is half an eye on retirement and isn't that fussed, just to beat Pacquiao with the sort of, you know, the technical class that he did, I think he can just outbox Berto the whole way. Sadly, in terms of seeing a competitive spectacle, I think it's going to be a case of whether Mayweather wins on points or knocks him out. But to find out whether he's going to knock him out, we're going to have to read your preview next week.
You are going to have to read my preview next week. But I am really looking forward to going out there. There's always a bit of a buzz in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
when it's fight week. George Groves, of course, is out there as well, which...
I actually really like the undercard.
Yeah. Some of it's good. But yeah, George Groves, Badu Jack is fascinating for me. That's the fight of the bill for me. I think Badu Jack was, or I seem to remember, I think we spoke again when I'm saying this, bringing back memories of talking about it last week, but he was quite fairly well thought of prospect. Then it all went wrong. And George Groves goes into this, I think, in the slightly awkward position of being the favourite.
Yeah, but although he's the favourite, and that this is, and he's got a lot to gain, as in he could finally get that world title that he's been trying so hard to get, I think it's really dangerous. You know, I think Badu Jack could hurt him. You know, has the ability to stop him, and if Groves gets stopped in a third world title fight, so the stakes are really high, because if that happens, be very hard for him to get back to world level.
He can certainly look back upon the Cole Frotch encounters as building blocks, as learning experiences against one of the best, certainly the best or the most accomplished British boxer of the last 10 years, and one of the most consistent performers at world level, Cole Frotch. However, if he was to lose to Badu Jack, it's a lot harder to forgive, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got so much to gain, but he's got everything to lose as well.
Yeah, really.
Jeopardy.
Really looking forward to that one. Really looking forward to that fight. Okay, well, that's about 45 minutes done. I've still got a lot of work to do before I turn my back on this week. Is there anything else we need to discuss, do you think?
Boxing related or just stuff? So I've got so much on my mind, Matt.
Yeah.
Need some more Dyrolite.
Are you going out for any? Are you going out for beers tonight?
Oh, it wasn't. I'm sure it was the burger that poisoned me. I'm certain of it. Unless my enemies have poisoned me.
Okay, well, hopefully you'll be fit and well next week. I won't be here to do the podcast, but I'm guessing that perhaps you and Nick will do it.
That would be the plan, unless you can phone in from Vegas.
I could perhaps phone in from Vegas, maybe when I'm...
When you're sober, so when's that going to be? At 9 a.m. on Wednesday. just write something on the back of a beer, mate. We'll read it out.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's, I've slandered you there.
Well, I did similar to you at the start of the podcast, so I suppose it's only fair. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. As always, thanks for the continued support. Please do pick up a copy of this week's issue, and regularly check the website for updates on the boxing world. And the opening bell. We'll be back next week.